You're listening to WGBU AM Kentwood and WGBS AM Muskegon, member-supported public radio, a service of Grand Valley State University.
This is Common Threads, an interfaith dialogue. Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Who was it that once said, "I used to believe in reincarnation, but that was lifetimes ago"? Not sure who it was, but the sentiment is an interesting one. A lot of people today in America do believe in reincarnation, and many people are fascinated by it, regardless of how they actually believe we end up. Well, a gentleman by the name of Stephen Sakellarius decided to create a video, a DVD, on reincarnation in America. He took a number of examples, and the systematic research in this was very rigorous. I viewed that video, and last week we had a conversation with Stephen about the making of it, and we decided to have him back this week to finish our conversation. Stephen Sakellarius is owner of Gold Thread Video Productions. It's a one-man video production business in Atlanta, Georgia. He has a master's degree in counseling and human systems from Florida State University. And he began a serious interest in fine art photography in 1986 and moved to video production in 1990 as an extension of his photography. Gold Thread Video was begun in 1977, and shortly thereafter, he began work on In Another Life, Reincarnation in America, as a personal project. He put the project together primarily by networking over the Internet with practically no resources except those available through his small video business, tradeouts, occasional small financial donations, and donations of services. Stephen has studied reincarnation, the topic of In Another Life, since 1973. However, he had primarily studied Eastern teachings on the subject, his strongest influences being the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda, Rumi, and Meher Baba, whom he began following in 1974. When Stephen began working on In Another Life in 1997, he started educating himself on Western research and studies, identifying the main people in the fields and successfully contacting a number of them for interviews. That is what In Another Life is all about. Stephen, welcome once again to Common Threads.
Thanks for having me back.
Last week we talked about the methodology. We talked about how you got into this. Let's talk right now about the reaction to your video by those people who have seen it. It has aired on how many PBS stations? I know one in Colorado.
One so far.
And what was the reaction from that? Did you get any feedback?
I got a couple of very positive comments, and I would say a stony silence from everybody else. And I understand that 13,000 households watched it without any promotion on a Saturday night at 10 o'clock there in Denver. And that was about it. It's been that way with the project. The people that are knowledgeable mostly are really enthusiastic, and there's a few individuals who have had experiences that write to me or contact me and tell me their experiences and say how relieved they are, basically, that somebody else, you know, that they're not alone. And then I don't hear from vast numbers of people. I get between 70 and 100 hits on the website per day, and there's quite a few copies out there. I've sold 50 to university professors, and one or two have given me feedback and said it's very much appreciated, always stimulates discussion in the classroom. That they appreciate the non-sensationalized way that I've presented the information.
Yeah, I will say that to anyone who would be considering looking at this, that it is done in a very professional and, you use the right word, non-sensationalistic. Yeah, it's not like watching one of those TV programs. Well, what are those? I don't even watch them. But
it's very, very different than that whole genre. I won't name any names either. But,
right,
yeah.
Right. But the ones that have the spooky music and the narrator who just has you on the edge of your seat.
Because reincarnation is natural to me. It's not spooky. I mean, I thought about that afterwards. I thought, why didn't I do something like this that would sell better? And I thought, because it didn't occur to me. It's not spooky. <You know? laughs> It's very natural. It's as natural as the rain cycle, as all of the cycles in nature.
Tell us a little bit about your personal spiritual path, how you ended up being the person you are right now.
Well, I was an atheist when I was in my late teens. I had been brought up that way pretty much. Democrat, but an atheist.
You were brought up as an atheist?
Yeah. I mean, you know, not like you're an atheist, but I was brought up in a family of people who had been burned out on religion for two different reasons. And it's kind of symbolic. My mother was burned out because of all the hypocrisy that she saw growing up, because her mother was very rigidly fundamentalist. And my father had seen tragedies. His mother was very religious, Greek Orthodox, and she had died when he was young. And he'd seen many, many tragedies in life, World War II. He was in those convoys that took supplies over to Europe before the war actually started, and saw ships going down all around him, you know, couldn't do anything because of the oil slicks burning in the water and things. He'd seen all these things, been through the Depression, and he decided there couldn't be a God, you know, because of all these horrible things. So I was brought up without, you know, a religion, except to be a liberal, politically liberal person. And in my late teens, I went through a tremendous searching and upheaval in my life. And about that same time, I had an introduction in a psychology class, a high school psychology class, the intern. And the teacher was a former minister, I remember. And the intern was allowed to get up and give a little 10-minute talk about Meir Baba, who had only passed on 2 years earlier at that time. This was 1971. He passed in 1969. And I looked at the picture and I said, well, it looks like an Italian chef, you know, it looks happy. And I made some psychological rationalization as to why he was happy, because he didn't have any childhood traumas like the rest of us have, or something, some psychological explanation. But I remember reading some points on how to love God, and Meir Baba basically was saying, if you are doing these things, you are already loving God. You don't even know it. You know, and that struck me because I was doing a lot of those things. So I said, maybe I really, you know, and I couldn't feel anything. I was so intellectual and so cut off from other people and so confused. But inside myself, that's, you know, how something can go in and stick, you know.
Sure.
It stuck for 3 years. And then I went through drugs and I went through Zen meditation and I went through searching. And finally I got off the drugs finally, had a bad trip at a Grateful Dead concert. You know, that was it. I was done with drugs. And I began really studying the scriptures of the world religions from the esoteric side, with the assumption that they were all talking about the same experience and the same spiritual reality from different points of view. And that may fit in with your program's philosophy, I don't know. But I assumed that. And I began to see the commonalities, and I began to run across reincarnation as, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita. And in other areas, Rumi, you know, the Persian Islamic Sufi poet Rumi also talks about it in a few places. It's accepted in Sufism. Always in the esoteric side of the religion, including Christianity, you'll find it. So at some point I got hold of a book called Listen Humanity, which gives, in the back, it gives some of Meir Baba's discourses, and in the front it's a description of a meeting with him, being with him. And that was very powerful. And it challenged some of my beliefs, but it was very powerful. And at some point I went to a meeting, and as soon as I was at the meeting, I knew. I just, in a heart level, I knew that was where I belonged. But it took another 6 months at least for me to struggle through some of the intellectual prejudices that I had.
So
that was 74.
Okay, so when you say struggling with some of the issues psychologically, was reincarnation one of those issues?
No, that was perfectly natural. I accepted it immediately.
Okay.
You know, strangely enough, that wasn't really it.
Let's ask some questions that I often hear whenever the subject of reincarnation comes up in social circles or in interfaith dialogues or other arenas. For instance, what's the point? What's the point of constantly coming back? For instance, those people who believe in one lifetime and a joyous afterlife, after they say, well, wait a minute, we've got it really great. You know, we die once and boom, we're in heaven. Why would you want to believe anything different?
Well, it doesn't make logical sense, first of all. And I would prefer to believe in something that makes logical sense. I know that's throwing out a big, you know, red flag. It's necessary to keep coming back basically because we have to get it right. There's the urge to get it right and the urge to find who we really are. And it revolves around who we really are. The true teaching of reincarnation, the deeper teaching of reincarnation, says that who we really are is the soul, and that the soul is in relation to God by analogy the way a drop is in relation to the ocean. That when we find who we really are, we find that we really were part and parcel of God, the soul and the oversoul that's been expressed. So we have to find that. The whole urge behind life is to realize that. And it's not going to happen in one life. It takes a long time to get to the point of realizing it, because realizing it means consciously. As I understand it, every time we go into deep sleep, we're merged into God. But we don't know it. We're not conscious. So the whole creation is for us to consciously realize what we experience in deep sleep, which is our oneness with God. And that takes a lot of incarnations. It's learning, but not book learning, not learning in the sense that we think of it. It's more like wisdom, gaining wisdom. And it takes a lot of lifetimes to gain the wisdom necessary, not only to learn, but to unlearn, really, to get to that state. So the goal for the reincarnationist who has tapped into the deeper teachings is much loftier than the goal that's presented by fundamentalist mainline Christianity, which basically wants you to enjoy a heaven in forever in linear time. And that's not a very high aim relative to the reincarnationist aim.
And what about the charge I've heard? How come there are, if reincarnation exists, how come there's 6 billion people on the planet today and, you know, a few years ago there were 4 billion, 2 billion, 1 billion? Where'd all those extra souls come from?
Well, you have to look at a cyclical perspective of time rather than a linear perspective of time for that to make sense. Everything is cyclical, and some of these cycles are huge, beyond our comprehension. There have been, when one Earth wears out and is no longer suitable for people to reincarnate in, there's another Earth. And also, the other aspect of this is that the physical world is not the only world. It's not the only place that souls are living in. There's spiritual planes that souls are living in. And there may be many, many, many more souls in the astral plane, for example, than there are in the physical plane. So there could be way more people in the astral waiting to incarnate than there are, than the Earth can physically sustain at any given time. But at certain periods of history, large numbers of people incarnate, and at other periods of history, maybe relatively fewer of them are incarnate. But they don't all have to be here, in other words. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's, and then people can incarnate from other planets, as I understand. And then there's the whole process of the souls coming up through the evolutionary chain, through minerals and plants and the lower animals and the higher animals and man. So there's this constant influx coming up through the evolutionary process as well.
So the blade of grass that you step on today in a million years could be somebody else stepping on a blade of grass.
As I understand, grass is set up as a group soul, so it's not just one blade.
Ah.
So it's like a soul will cover in a big area of grass, as I understand it. I'm not real knowledgeable about the specific mechanics of these things, but in a sense, yeah.
And what about people who want to maintain not only their Christianity, but their denomination? They want to be Christian. They don't want to be esoteric Christian. They want to be a Baptist. They want to be a Methodist. And yet reincarnation still has a pull on them. Is there any way that you could see where you could meld both the standard Christian story and reincarnation? Or do you really have to pull away from that?
the standard Christian story is a heresy. I'm going to say it bluntly, that was introduced in the early centuries of Christianity. And it is not possible to maintain that particular perspective and fit reincarnation in. It is definitely possible to be Christian, as it was for many prominent church fathers in the early centuries of Christianity, but it's not possible to maintain that traditional belief system and bring reincarnation in, which is why it's so threatening to people and why it's so strongly fought against. And the same goes with the materialistic point of view.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and we're speaking with Stephen Sakellarios, who is the creator and producer of In Another Life, Reincarnation in America. It's a DVD, and we'll tell you more about that, how to get a hold of it, or perhaps, hopefully, we might even see it locally sometime here on WGVU, because we are a PBS. We have a PBS sister station, a television station, so we don't know, but, you know, could be. Stephen, your video does not talk a great deal about the history of reincarnation in the West. Am I correct?
That's correct. I didn't go into it. There are other documentaries on the subject that do. And if you go into the Theosophical Society's literature, some of those writers go into it quite extensively. And I've educated myself on it to a point. I know some of the specifics about it. But I didn't really delve into that too much in the documentary. I wanted to introduce the topic. I wanted to give a sociological overview of how Americans are encountering it now. And the first thing was to establish that we're really talking about a phenomenon and not just an idea. And I did that by presenting Dr. Stevenson's work and substantiating that it had been looked at by some strongly qualified people and pronounced genuine science. And then I went on to say, well, how are Americans encountering this thing? What are the different avenues that they're using to run into this? So history didn't really come up.
Tell me if you've had this experience. Now, we've had, over the years on Common Threads, a number of Buddhists and Hindus and Sufi Muslims. And, of course, in the interfaith dialogue circles that I run in, I do meet the variety of people for whom reincarnation is part of their belief. What I notice is that it tends to be something they talk about very little. And when I've attended lectures given by the clergy of these religions, I hear very little of reincarnation actually being talked about. Much more, if I go to a Christian church, will I hear them talk about the ultimate afterlife. Do you resonate with that?
Well, I've focused in on this little area, so I'm a little unusual. If you were to talk to most of the other followers of Meher Baba, it doesn't come up that often either, because, again, the goal is loftier. We're not so worried about the afterlife. We want to realize God. So it comes up as an adjunct to that. Now, my belief is that it was exactly the same way in Jesus' day, and that's why you don't see, or one reason you don't see so many references to it, because it was assumed to be true, and it wasn't the main focus. The main focus was to realize God as Jesus knew God, and it wasn't so much about the afterlife. So it would come up in conjunction with knotty karmic questions of karmic law. You know, Jesus was the rabbi, and his disciples would ask him some knotty question of karmic law and ask him to decide it. And very often, apparently, he would take that and move it up to a higher level, you know, so that the focus wasn't so much on that particular question of law, but on the deeper issues. And the prime example of that would be in John 9:1-9, I think it is. However that works. I don't quote scriptures very often. But the disciples are asking Jesus, why was this man born blind? Was it something he did, or did he sin, or did his parents sin? And it's very clear to me from that they are offering, in this order, the possible explanations of, one, reincarnation, and two, the sins of the fathers, which were, I interpret, the primary main beliefs of the day. So Jesus took it to a higher level and says neither. It was for the glory of God to be manifest. And we can interpret that in different ways. But he did not tell them, this reincarnation idea is of the devil, you should never think of that, this is terrible. He didn't condemn the idea of reincarnation at all, because it was taken for granted. And it is the same way in these other groups that you're talking about. It will come up in specific instances. You know, you probably could ask the right question and get them to talk about it, but it's not the prime focus.
No, I think, from what I gather, leading an ethical life and, yes, searching for God realization and essentially breaking the cycle of reincarnation. Would you agree that's the goal?
That's correct, the idea. Because if we really are the soul within the oversoul and we want to realize that, then we have to get past the idea that I am this being who reincarnates. Because ultimately, that is not correct. So the focus, their focus is higher. But there is a sense in which reincarnation is very, very central to these deeper teachings. And that is that if you can't accept reincarnation, in my opinion, you are very much blocked from really understanding the deeper teachings of these religions.
Another criticism that I often hear from Western theologies is, well, if reincarnation is real, or if somebody believes in it, regardless of whether it's real, somebody might say, I could feed the hungry and clothe the naked and be true to my wife and all of this, but I don't, maybe not, maybe next lifetime. Right now I'm going to have fun.
Well, the person that wants to have fun will find one excuse or another. If he's a Christian, he will say, he will be a quietist, you know, and he will, if I've used the term correctly, and he will say, grace will save me, you know, or if he is a Catholic in the old days, he will, pay a certain amount, you know, or he will sin, and then he will go to confession, and that will take care of it. In other words, a lazy person will find some way to distort whatever beliefs he accepts. But it's a distortion. Reincarnation is first and foremost a champion of personal responsibility, because you realize that you are creating your reality right out in front of you. Nobody else is to blame. You are to blame for whatever situation you're in, and there's something there for you to learn, and until you get it right, you will have to keep doing it over and over. And it will keep getting worse and worse. If you keep ignoring whatever your lesson is, it will get worse and worse until it knocks you on the head, and at some point you have to face it. So reincarnation is about personal responsibility, if it's understood properly.
And how about in India, of course, they get a lot of criticism because they think that people who are born in the lower castes deserve that. And sometimes I've even heard they say they don't even deserve help because, well, this is your punishment for something, and I'm not going to dirty my hands helping you.
Well, again, a person lacking compassion will find some way to rationalize that. If it's not reincarnation, it'll be something else. It's not the belief that makes the person compassionate. It's having developed a capacity for compassion, no matter what your belief is. If you're an atheist and you have developed a capacity for compassion, you will find a way to express compassion within that belief system. And vice versa, if you have not developed the capacity, then you will not. But about the caste system specifically, Swami Vivekananda gave a very good exposition on that. He said that the original idea of the caste system was, on a spiritual plane, was very much like what we conceive of the American dream to be. It was the idea that a person should be given the scope to follow whatever their, we would say, calling, to follow whatever their dharma, their personal unfoldment is. That they should be, and they categorized them. Probably unfortunately, they said, well, this is one category of the way that somebody might develop, is the Brahmin, the priest, and here's another direction they might develop according to their development, you know, as a person, and that would be the warrior and then the worker and so on. And they were not meant to be hereditary. At the point where they became hereditary, it got distorted and became what we know of as the caste system today. And that's where the ugliness came in about it.
Sure, and I've heard Christians say that something similar happened in medieval times with the church.
Yeah.
A sort of caste system developed with the priests on top of the the pecking order.
Exactly. And I would imagine in the early days of the Christian church that leaders emerged naturally in a group, probably small groups, met in somebody's home. A leader would emerge, and everybody would acknowledge that this was a senior member, and they would serve, and it wasn't formalized, and it certainly wasn't inherited, because that the son may or may not be suitable to run the company, So this happens in all groups, I think.
Sure. We're coming down to the end of the wire on this program. Do me a favor and repeat a little bit as to what your vision is for the video in the near future.
Well, my vision has been that this should not be preaching to the choir. It should be getting out to the general public to kind of wake them up to see that they're not alone, to see how 20 or 25% of them are encountering this thing that's supposed to be just a flaky subject. That these large numbers of people are encountering it in serious ways. And it's just a reflection back to society to get them to think, to wake people up. But gradually I've been looking at this rejection by all of the PBS stations, and I'm thinking maybe it's not the time for the public to be introduced to this, because certain academicians, certain people in the universities are embracing it wholeheartedly. And students are being exposed to it. Maybe that's where it should go. So I don't have an agenda that I stick to that I say this is what's supposed to happen, because I don't know for sure what's supposed to happen. I have my idea how things are going to go. But all through this project, I've had my idea of what I want in it, and something would happen, that person wouldn't be available, somebody else would come up, it would go a different direction kind of all by itself. And, I would say, okay, well, let's try this. So I don't know for sure what the plan is.
And for people who are interested in learning more about the video, they can go to your website, which again is?
It's www.ial.goldthread.com.
All right. And you mentioned last week that you're not able to sell the show to people in the United States, but people listening on the World Wide Web in, say, Europe or Asia, they could contact you.
Absolutely. And it's also open for, I still have film rights everywhere, so if a broadcaster is interested in broadcasting it, or I would be very grateful if people would recommend it to television stations. That's certainly also a possibility.
Very good. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us this week and last week, and I wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you, Fred. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. My guest has been Stephen Sakellarios. Please join us again next week for another edition of Common Threads. Common Threads is a production of WGVU in cooperation with the Interfaith Dialogue Association, 458-0307. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the station, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University. The participants on this program represent themselves and are not designated spokespeople for the faiths they represent. Send questions or comments, write us in care of Common Threads, WGVU Radio, 301 West Fulton, Grand Rapids, Michigan, 49504, or by email at stelthom@juno.com. Thank you for listening, and join us next week.